Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide around the world. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the ESIAC report when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. That's the 15.3% formula. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your 17% income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying the 17% income tax on the original $50,000 gross income? But you know that the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of $50,000 in Social Security tax. Then they make you pay 17% of that same $50,000 in income tax, which means that you pay 17% on the $7,650 twice. And that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and everyone else that pays that tax. What would you think if Sears or Penny's or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? Well, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, tax and status, the school is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, last time we were talking about the Royal Commission of Canada, and they were taking testimony on the René Cassie ESIAC formula for curing cancer. And the commission, the chairman of the commission, looks over at Mrs. Cassie. Remember this story? After a rather lengthy, heated debate between Renee's lawyer and the commissioners about her refusal to turn over her formula. Commissioner Valencette, Mrs. Cassie, you are seriously, I think, prejudicial to your own cause in not revealing the formula. It may be favorably, or we may be favorably impressed. We don't know. As far as we have gone, we cannot tell. There may be something in it, as Dr. Guyette says. He thinks it is something which should be investigated further. Now, that's what he suggested, to have some independent investigator go ahead, and he appeals to the Ontario Medical Society to have it investigated. That is his impression, and he is a disinterested party. He's not biased. We feel we should like to pursue our observations further, and that is the reason why we want the formula. So with that, the inquisition was over, at least for the time being. 2 weeks later came the testimony from the doctors who were opposing Renee. And this testimony mattered a great deal because it possessed the vehemence and the zeal worthy of the medical establishment's concerted effort to find out the truth. Renee listened patiently as Dr. Richards and Dr. Nobel tried to tear her treatment apart. Many patients had not benefited at all from ESIAC, they insisted, and some had even died. Now imagine that. ESIAC couldn't cure everybody. Renee responded in kind. She said a great number of these cases are hopeless cases. who came to me perhaps for treatment, and I tell the family, I did not tell the patient, but I tell the family that it is hopeless, and I cannot hope to do anything other than possibly give them some comfort. If they care to take a few treatments, they do so. And if they go away and die, then those records go against me. Commissioner Vallon challenged. Apparently you say you cannot cure an advanced case. Renee snapped back, no, I did not say that. If the organs are destroyed, yes, I cannot build new bodies. I'm going to pause right there. Now, we don't know how many cases that the ESIAC didn't cure, and I reported to you earlier that from my personal first-hand interviews of various naturopathic doctors who have said to me that once the immune system has been destroyed by chemotherapy and radiation, there's nothing that we can do. Because all of these herbal cures are designed, they work on the immune system. In the final analysis, what cures the cancer is your immune system. And the herbs, the vitamins, the minerals, the detoxification agents are the vehicle or the means by which they help the immune system to cure the cancer. Now, evidently, many people came to her and they had gone through radiation treatment and they had gone through chemotherapy. And the reports that we see here is that even after I came off of chemotherapy, I was cured. I don't know what to tell you about that. All I can say is that evidently sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Maybe it was that the chemotherapy or the radiation had not destroyed the immune system. Or it had not suppressed it or impaired it to such a degree that the herbs and vitamins or the herbs that are in the ESIAC couldn't revive it. But I'm reporting to you from my own personal observations, from my own personal interviews, that every naturopath that I've talked to, no exceptions, every single one of them said to me that once the immune system's been compromised by chemotherapy, well, it's all over. There's nothing that we can do. Now, evidently, in the Cassie case over here with ESIAC, there are some exceptions to the rule that that these naturopaths had not been familiar with. Now, keep in mind that not all naturopaths use ESIAC to cure cancer. You could go to 100 naturopaths who cure cancer, and I can tell you from my personal observations, many of them have heard of ESIAC and don't use it. And that's because ESIAC is not the only cure to cancer. Some of them use other means. Many of them use Laetrile, or Indian black salve, or barley green, wheatgrass, the frequency generator. Although I've heard great reports about this frequency generator, I haven't seen one in operation. The only ones I know of are down in Mexico. They're strictly prohibited here in the United States. Gerson coffee, nutritional supplements, and blood root, they're all used by naturopaths all over America today. Now remember, this is underground medicine. I mean, you're not going to find one of these guys advertising in the Yellow Pages bloodroot for sale here because it's prohibited, just like marijuana. You know, when you want marijuana, you don't go to the Yellow Pages and look for marijuana under M. And so, some of the reports submitted by opposing physicians actually admitted that their former patients claimed to have received benefit from ESIAC, at least in the area of pain reduction. In fact, almost all of the hostile reports submitted mentioned ESIAC's ability to reduce pain. But these were post-mortem reports, and ESIAC's ability to reduce pain was only mentioned briefly. Pain relief was not the issue. The issue was to crush Renee, and finally a tired and wearisome Renee said to the commissioners, well, Dr. Noble and Dr. Richards are both bringing up a lot of patients whom I took on for pity's sake. They're not taking up my proven cases, which have benefited. A great number of these patients came for one or two treatments and never came back, and I could not save them. I did not want to take them at all because I knew the cases were hopeless. Every case was given up by the medical profession before I even took it. Now, that's something that I've observed here, too. Let me make a comment. By the time people in general, go to a naturopath or an alternative health clinic, they have already been to the medical doctors, and they've already been through the medical orthodox treatments. And by the time that you get to the naturopath and you're on just about on your deathbed, you know, for practical purposes, it's just about all over for you. In the cases that I've observed personally over the years where people have gone, when they get cancer, they go straight to a naturopath, I have never seen a case yet where the naturopath couldn't cure it. And I've seen a number of them. No, not hundreds, but a number. And I'm personally involved with one here in my own family. So I can testify, at least from my limited observations and interviews and perspective, that I don't believe that there's any naturopath in the United States of America, and probably worldwide, if he's got any moxie at all, unless he's just an out-and-out quack, that can't cure cancer, because cancer is that easy to cure. Now, remember that formula that Cassie didn't want to give out? Well, here's the formula. Get your pen and paper out. She wanted to give the formula to the world free of charge. So let me do that. I'll tell you what the formula is. I got it right here in front of me. In fact, I'm going to read it to you right off the bottle. You can buy the formula already in prepared form, legally, with the exception of bloodroot. Bloodroot is not in the formula, and they can't put it in here because it's illegal. So what they do is this. They sell you the Flora Essence, which is a brand name. It's Flora. Actually, this stuff is made here in the United States. I said in the last program it was made in Germany. The last batch that we got was made in Germany. But this is made up in Linden, Washington. Linden, L-Y-N-D-E-N, Washington, 98264. And it's manufactured and distributed by the Flora Company, P.O. Box 73, Linden, Washington, 98264. They've even got a phone number. It's 1-800. Now, let's see if this is 446, I believe it is, 2110. 1-800-446-2110. Now, I'm not here to sell or to recommend this particular tea. I just wanted to get the bottle and give you the formula. So here's the formula that came from the Ojibwa Indians. It's made up of burdock root, sheep sorrel, slippery elm, watercress, Turkish rhubarb root. Now, it says Turkish rhubarb root. I find it hard to believe that the Ojibwa Indians, 200 years ago, were getting Turkish rhubarb root. I find that a little hard to believe. So I think rhubarb root, which is an herb, doesn't necessarily have to come from Turkey, although the stuff in this bottle does. Kelp, blessed thistle, red clover, that's eight. Now, that's eight cleansing herbs. And the original formula had bloodroot, number nine. Remember, bloodroot's illegal, so they don't put bloodroot in the tea. So you'll have to furnish that yourself. But you can get the tea itself, which, remember, you need to clear these dead cancer cells out of your body. And here's what it does. It tells you. Elaine Alexander, the late Canadian health researcher and radio producer, broadcaster, collaborated exclusively with Flora to produce fluorescence. This purification tea was entrusted to Elaine by Dr. Charles Bruch, M.D., who was the personal physician to the late President John F. Kennedy. Dr. Bruch was a partner in research and co-owner with the famous Canadian nurse Renee Cassie in perfecting this formula at his Cambridge, Massachusetts clinic. Fluorescence liquid gently flushes toxic residues from the kidneys, liver, lungs, colon, bloodstream, and deepest cells. All right, now, the purpose, remember, for this is to flush these toxins. Toxins, that's the dead cancer cells. What killed the cancer cells? Hell, I suppose even if you went to the doctor, went through chemotherapy, and while the chemotherapy is killing the cancer cells, if you took this cleansing agent, it might save your life. Might. I don't know. I imagine that's why we have clinics and experimentation. But I'm going to tell you right now, you're never going to have a cancer cure in the United States any more than you're going to have peace. And that's because there's no money in peace, and there's no money in a cancer cure. There's money in cancer treatment, and there's money in war. And as long as there's money in anything, that's what we're going to go after. Now, Renee Cassie was very concerned about her formula being given to the world free of charge. She wanted to do it free. Now, Pfizer, Merck, and GlaxoSmithKline want to make a profit. But you can rest assured that GlaxoSmithKline, Merck, and Pfizer are not going to put this formula on the market in any form because it cures cancer. And we can't have that. You see, if you ever came up with a cure to cancer, then you lose all the treatment money, which is $500 billion a year. And that's where the money's at. The money is in surgery. The money is in oncologists treating cancer, not curing it, treating it. You see, there's no money in a diabetes cure, but there's lots of money in treatment and insulin. And it goes on forever. It goes on as long as you live, as long as you want to live. You have to have the insulin. So that's the way that game is played. So now that you understand it, boy, that's no big deal. Well, in December of 1939, the commission delivered its interim report to Parliament, and it stated that in cases where diagnosis had been by biopsy, there was only one recovery with SEAC and two improvements. In cases diagnosed by X-ray, one recovery was attributed to SEAC and two improvements. In clinically diagnosed cases, two recoveries were attributed to SEAC, and four improvements were noted. And the commission felt there were at least three wrong diagnoses, up to 10 questionable diagnoses, and four that were not conclusive. Only 11 were accepted. Out of the 11, five cures were attributed to previous radium treatments. One of them was Mrs. Annie Bonner, who had been faced with amputation of her arm after a year of radium and X-ray treatments. She had recovered, and it certainly couldn't have been from a simple tea made from plants. It was the radium that delivered Mrs. Bonner, the commission concluded. Well, Renee had this to say. She said, "It's my opinion that the hearing of my case before the Cancer Commission was one of the greatest farces ever perpetrated in the history of man." Oh, no, no, no. Renee, there have been many farces along this line. You're not the only one. You're just one of many. You know, these kinds of whitewashes come up, like the whitewashing of the Titanic sinking and the whitewashing of the Lusitania sinking and the whitewashing of the 9/11 committee and the whitewashing of the Pearl Harbor attack. And I mean, my God, boys and girls, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. This goes on and on and on without end. John F. Kennedy was killed by a single assassin. Remember that? I mean, and if you believe that kind of crap, you know, you need to buy the Brooklyn Bridge. But, you know, it's out there for public consumption. It's what the officials put out there, and you can like it or lump it. But that's the way it's going to be. Now, you can sit here and you can fight it if you want to. You know, it's up to you. But there isn't any need to. And that's because the majority of people don't want it anyway. So what you're trying to do is to act as an evangelist and save all these people from cancer. These people don't want to be saved from cancer. Well, they don't want to be saved this way from cancer. Yeah, they'd like to go to the medical doctor and get a shot. They'd like to go in and be operated on and have a cure to cancer. But they don't want alternative medicine, as is evidenced by the fact that the majority of people go to medical doctors. Now, I avoid medical doctors like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD, but I'm not out here trying to convince everybody that they should avoid medical doctors. I don't care what they do. I'm not trying to persuade you one way or the other. As a reporter, I present facts. Here are the facts. Here's the source of the facts. Here are the letters. Here's the story. Here's the testimony. Why don't you read it and you come to your own conclusion? I don't need to tell you what to believe or what to think or what to read. Do it yourself, and then you come to a conclusion, and then you can act accordingly. That's what I've done. I've acted accordingly. Now, my wife has had cancer, first diagnosed in 1978, recurred in 1984, recurred again in 2005. She's had three recurrences. And I can report now she's currently in remission again. But she's been through this three times. And all three times, she has used a different methodology. Now, this third time, she's using the ESSIAC remedy. God, it works like a shot. This ESSIAC's great stuff. Which is why I'm making this report, because I wouldn't make the report until I had tested it or had some knowledge about it. I can't make a report on the Royal Rife machine, because while I've heard great reports, that's hearsay. I'm not here to report hearsay. I'm here to report what I've observed. And I'm here to observe or to report to you that my observations of ESSIAC is great. Also, the Easter Lily ovum that my wife used in 1978 worked like a shot, and the Gerson, G-E-R-S-O-N, Gerson, the guy's name is Dr. Max Gerson, came up with the coffee enema formula along with nutritional supplements and toxin elimination. Yeah, and wheatgrass is what my wife used in 1978. So it was the Ann Wigmore wheatgrass. Well, it works like a shot. And she also used Laetrol back in the 78 to 80 period. She was on cancer therapy for 2 years and 8 months. 2 years and 8 months, 78 to 1980. And she used wheatgrass, Gerson coffee, and nutritional supplementations with Laetrol, and worked like a shot. 1984, she used Easter Lily Ovum, worked like a shot. This time, 2005, she's using ESSIAC, works like a shot. ESSIAC in conjunction with bloodroot that you have to get from another source. Remember this, the ESSIAC tea without the bloodroot is as useless as tits on a boar hog. I'm just telling you. It's good stuff, and it'll probably detoxify you and do all those other things, but it won't kill the tumors. Bloodroot's what kills the tumors. Bloodroot, by the way, is banned by the FDA. Isn't it surprising that these herbs that are necessary for cancer cure are banned by the FDA? Ah, it's just a coincidence, I know, but I just thought I'd tell you. Well, the Cancer Commission, in effect, had stated that ESSIAC had no merit, and unless she turned over the formula, she would be subject to prosecution under the Kirby Law. What they're really after is the formula, so that they can patent it and bury it. That's what they wanted to do. See, she went around there. She might as well have come down here to Detroit and said, I've got a carburetor that gets 200 miles to the gallon. Well, you know, Exxon and Mobil would send out a snuff team to snuff her out. You can't have a carburetor that gets 200 miles to the gallon. Well, that would threaten national security. That would threaten the oil industry, for crying out loud. We don't want things like that. And you're not going to get anything like that. A lot of times people talk about, you know, these alternative energy sources. Hell, you people got your heads up the wrong end of your anatomy. You're not going to get any alternative energy sources as long as there's oil in the ground. You know, oil makes the world go round. And by the way, there isn't any shortage of oil. I think I've reported that to you a time or two. The Canadians have 3 trillion barrels. In tar sands, the Americans have 3.6 trillion barrels in shale, and there's a trillion barrels that's proved reserves in the world today. So there's a 50-year supply of oil in Arabia. There's a six. What did we say that was here in just the United States? I think we're using 25 billion barrels a year. That's 3,600 billion. 3,600 divided by 25 is how much? 144-year supply. The United States of America has a 144-year supply of oil for the world. Canada has a little bit less than that. They've only got 3,000. But, you know, that's just preliminary estimates. 3,000 divided by 25 is 120 years. So you Canadians have 120-year supply of oil in Alberta, just in your tar sands, for the entire world. There's no shortage of oil, kids. No shortage of oil. What you have is a politically contrived shortage of oil to drive the price up. It's kind of like this deal over here in the North Slope. Did you hear that story? It seems that BP up here has 16 miles of pipe. And they've got these oil wells. See, so they got an oil well out here. So let's suppose they got 100 oil wells. And they got 16 miles of pipe that go from these oil wells into the terminal where the big 48-inch pipeline is located. So the other day, there was, back in March, there was an oil spill. There was a hole developed in an oil pipe and spilled some oil in the ground. And so then everybody gets real excited about that, you know, environmentalist guys. So, we can't have that. So they got an investigation going. Come to find out they've got pitting in their pipe, 16 miles of pipe. So they shut down the whole damn field for 3 to 6 months until they fix these 16 miles of pipe. Now, these are the kind of people that you should put in control or in charge of highway construction. Yeah, here's the way that would work. They develop some potholes in Highway 95, somewhere between Miami and Washington, D.C. And using this formula, they would come out and close down the entire Highway 95 from Miami to Washington for 6 months until they fixed the whole damn road. And then they would reopen it. Now, fortunately for us people here, so far, we haven't had that kind of highway repair. What they do is they take 5 miles of highway, and they go to work on that 5 miles, and they repair it. And then they divert traffic around the repairs, and then we can go about our business. But they don't close the whole road down. And I got to thinking about that because they were showing a bunch of pipes, and there was about 15 pipes in a row here, so. And I said to myself, now these guys could not close down one out of those 15 pipes and keep the oil pumping through those 15 pipes while they replace one pipe, which might take them a month. And then close down one of the 15 pipes and then open up the 16th pipe that they now have brand new and run oil through 15 pipes while they're repairing or replacing this, the second pipe and then the third pipe and then the 15th pipe and then the 16th pipe. They can't do that. They got to close down the whole oil field and fix all 16 pipes at the same time and then reopen it. Meanwhile, it takes 400,000 barrels of oil upstream, which means that the price of gas goes up 20 cents. Now listen, kids, these guys aren't dumb. They know that they can fix one pipe at a time and keep the whole stream of oil working just like they always have. But then they wouldn't get the extra 20 or 30 cents a gallon. But by closing the whole oil field down, they can justify jacking the price up. And do you know, I've been watching the news for a week. Not one single person has ever raised that issue. I must be the only guy in America whose brain isn't dead yet. I just looked at that and I said, my God, I can't believe what I'm seeing here. It's not the Alaska pipeline. It's not the 48-inch pipeline, you know, that they're talking about. It's the feeder pipelines, and not the feeder pipelines of the whole oil field, just the BP portion of it. So anyway, there you are, and it's going to work. I mean, hell, I'm not opposed to having $4 or $6 gas. They got $6 gas in the Netherlands, and those people get by all right. They got near $6 gas in Great Britain, and those people get by all right. We Americans can get by just as well as the British and the Dutch on $6 gas. It's going to make some lifestyle changes. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, if they can pay $6 in Holland, boy, we can pay $6 in Texas. And you're going to be paying $6 in Texas. So make up your mind to it. Now, not all of us have to do that. You know, most of us do, but not all of us. Some of us can think ahead of that and come up with an alternative conclusion. But here with cancer, the commission, in effect, had stated that Essiac didn't have any merit. And unless she turns over her formula, she's going to be subject to prosecution under the Kirby Law. Well, you talk about intimidation. If you don't give us that formula, we're going to lock you up. So this introduced what's known in the Essiac story as the silent years, which we'll take up when we come back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and our Law Hour and editorial review are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not entirely endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. The Silent Years. Well, Renee Cassie kept her clinic open in spite of the Cancer Commission's ruling, but her patients found it more difficult and sometimes even impossible to provide Renee with a written diagnosis. So Renee became increasingly worried that it was only a matter of time before she would be prosecuted and imprisoned under the Kirby Bill. So she closed her clinic in 1942. And her friends described her at that time as bordering on a nervous breakdown. For the time being, she had taken her fight as far as any one person could against the awesome power and limitless resources of the medical establishment. She moved with her husband to North Bay until he died in 1948. She then returned to Bracebridge. Little is known about her activities at that time. We do know that in 1952, she received several urgent letters from Godfrey Winter Baumgarten, postmarked Rome, imploring her to please try her treatment on Eva Perón, wife of Argentinian dictator Juan Perón. She declined for reasons known only to herself. For the most part, until 1959, Renee remained out of sight. And it was widely believed that she was still treating patients, not surprising given Renee's dedication to saving lives. One thing is for certain, the commission had not forgotten about Renee. A letter written by C.J. Telfer, secretary of the Commission for the Investigation of Cancer Remedies, to Mr. McKinnon Phillips, the Minister of Health, dated May 29, 1958, shows a continuing interest in her activities. The nurse from Bracebridge, who refused many years ago to divulge the formula, is apparently still using it in the treatment of cancer. The commission feels no action should be taken by them, but directed the matter be brought to your attention in case you might wish to refer this one also to the College of Physicians and Surgeons. Dr. Phillips knew his history and did nothing, choosing, as it were, not to open Pandora's box. But even though Renee was not as active as she had been in the past, letters continued to arrive at the desk of Premier Leslie Frost from patients and supporters of Renee Cassie. Their content was always the same, former patients telling their stories of miraculous recoveries, supporters urgently requesting that Renee be allowed to continue saving the lives of suffering humanity. I might point out that if you think that the politicians are concerned about the suffering of suffering humanity, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again. In September of 1958, the Premier wrote to Renee, and here's an excerpt. He said it would speed matters up greatly if you would get in touch with W.G. Brown, the Deputy Minister of Health, and arrange through him to give the Cancer Remedies Investigation Commission the details of your methods so the commission could give them a thorough analysis. The letter reflects a person who had absolutely no understanding of Renee or her past, and one wonders if the Premier was joking or had been in a coma for the past 30 years. Did he seriously think that Cassie had somehow had a mysterious change of heart and would now simply turn over her ESIAC formula to the Cancer Commission for the benefit of the pharmaceutical industry? Well, in January of 1959, it was apparent that nurse Renee Cassie, now 70 years old, was still considered a threat to the medical establishment. Dr. M.B. Diamond, the Minister of Health, who oddly in the future would be involved with ESIAC in a much different capacity, wrote to a supporter of Renee, a fellow by the name of R.J. Boyer, for the Bracebridge area. Here's in part what he had to say. Dr. McFedrin assures me that the college will not prosecute Renee without first getting in touch with my deputy minister or with me. I gathered, however, that it is their hope that Miss Cassie's activities might be controlled by means of surveillance and that no prosecution would ever be necessary. ESIAC was not a dead issue. They were spying on her. Well, here comes Renee's triumphant return. In 1959 marks a watershed in Renee Cassie's life. Now, although she was 70 years old, she was about to begin what could arguably be the most important phase in the development of ESIAC. Because in February 1959, a Canadian named Roland Davidson, who had been cured by ESIAC of a severe case of ulcerated hemorrhoids, traveled to New York. His mission was to convince Ralph Day, the editorial director and the vice president of Fawcett Publications, the publisher of True Magazine, the world's largest men's magazine, that they should print the story of Renee Cassie and ESIAC. Well, Roland Davidson had with him 30 years of documents, testimonials, letters from doctors, and newspaper articles, in all about 10 pounds of material, which supported his story that a humble nurse from the backwoods of Canada had stumbled onto a cure for cancer, in spite of all of the cancer hype and all of the cancer talk that had been going on around the world for decades. Day, D-A-I-G-H, at first understandably highly skeptical, spent several hours going over Davidson's material. Gradually, his skepticism gave way to sincere interest. Davidson had something, and he took the material to his editor, Douglas Kennedy, who, after reviewing the material, was equally impressed, but they knew if they published the story about a natural cure for cancer discovered by a nurse from Canada, they'd better be prepared to defend their story with real scientific data, not just a hodgepodge of materials that Davidson had with him. So Day and a friend, Paul Murphy of the Science Research Institute of New York, went to Bracebridge to interview Renee and several doctors who had worked with her. But Day had more in mind than just verifying Renee's story. He brought along an agreement that he would propose to Renee if he found Essiac worthy of further investigation. It was an agreement to go to Cambridge and to work with one of the most prestigious doctors in the United States, Dr. Charles Bruch, M.D., personal physician to the president, President Kennedy. Well, before going to Bracebridge, Day had spoken to his friend, Dr. Charles Bruch, who, after hearing the story, expressed keen interest in doing research on Essiac. Day believed if Essiac was thoroughly tested at the Bruch Clinic and subsequently earned Bruch's stamp of approval, it would be beyond reproach. Well, it didn't take much time in Bracebridge for both men to ascertain that Renee was sincere, and Essiac did, in fact, have serious merit. So they spoke to several doctors who had worked with Renee in the past, and they reviewed patient records and chatted with some of Renee's old patients. All were very much alive and well. Renee and Essiac were real. They asked her if she would consider going to the Bruch Medical Center to do research on Essiac under the supervision of Dr. Charles Bruch. Her expenses would be paid. She would retain the rights to her formula. She would be allowed to test Essiac on human cancer patients. And if testing proved positive, a corporation would be formed and Essiac would be made available to the public. It was exactly what Renee had wanted all of her adult life. What did it matter that she was 70 years old? What did it matter that she had been hounded for more than 30 years by an intransigent medical establishment? She believed in her destiny to bring God's gift into the hands of suffering humanity, and Dr. Bruch could be just the person to make it all possible. So she agreed to go to Cambridge. Fawcett Publications never printed their story. So the ultimate partnership was found. Dr. Charles Bruch is one of the most respected physicians in the United States. He was President John F. Kennedy's personal doctor and trusted friend. His curriculum, far too lengthy to include here, reads like the history of a national hero. His friends and colleagues include members of Congress, the Supreme Court, the elite from every society or sector of society, and yet he possesses no airs, exhibits no elitism. Few human beings have collected the number of honors, awards, and citations bestowed on Dr. Bruch, both as a physician and as a humanitarian. The Bruch Medical Center is one of the largest medical clinics in Massachusetts. Why, then, would a physician of such note, held in high esteem by the medical establishment, the physician who administered the first polio vaccine in the United States, have an interest in working with a humble nurse from Canada, who allegedly had an unproven cancer cure, and who had trouble with the authorities to boot? Why, indeed? Well, although Dr. Bruch was highly respected by the medical establishment, he had his own ideas about the most effective ways to practice medicine. He was, by anyone's standards, a unique human being, and Dr. Bruch had studied acupuncture, had set up the first clinic to conduct acupuncture research, and was presently using it in his clinic when Renee arrived in 1959. Now, only a handful of doctors in the United States had heard of acupuncture, let alone used it as a regular form of treatment, as early as 1959. After all, this was some Oriental mysticism. Dr. Bruch was the first doctor in the Western Hemisphere to initiate a plan in his clinic, similar to Medicare, for people who did not have the money to pay for medical help. Nothing so earth-shattering, but it was in 1959. Dr. Bruch's concern for suffering humanity was no less than Rene Cassie's. And it's also instructive to note that before Dr. Bruch was to become involved with Rene Cassie, he was already highly interested in preventative medicine, nutrition, and other forms of natural treatment. At a time when traditional medicine scoffed at even the idea that diet played some role in disease, that preventative therapy was an important part of medical practice, and that natural substances could be effective against certain diseases, Dr. Bruch's thinking was heretical, to say the least, in 1959. However, one of Dr. Bruce's greatest talents, and there were many, was his incredible ability to search for the truth with an open, unbiased mind, while at the same time maintaining a respectful relationship, indeed receiving great accolades from the very people who had a reputation for stifling this kind of unorthodox thinking. The defenders of the status quo had met their match with Dr. Bruce. Believing he was one of them, they chose to support rather than to destroy him. Whether by providence or by chance, René could not have found a better partner. So René arrived at the Bruce Clinic in May of 1959, and she immediately went to work under the supervision of both Dr. Bruce and Dr. Charles McClure, the director of research. Her first patient was a 40-year-old woman named Lena Bursell. X-rays showed her to be terminally ill with lung cancer. After receiving her first treatment with Essiac from René, she reported an immediate improvement in her ability to breathe. The severe pain that she was experiencing in her joints lessened. She lived for 3 months. A biopsy on a patient named John Cronin confirmed that he was terminally ill with cancer of the right lung. He took 7 weekly treatments of Essiac at the Bruce Clinic, and the pains in his chest all but disappeared, along with his shortness of breath. He could now climb several flights of stairs without effort and again took up his hobby of swimming. Russell McCassie, suffering from basal cell carcinoma of the right cheek, proved by biopsy, was administered the number four Essiac treatments. The lesion changed color from red to pale pink and then reduced in size markedly. The main ulcer crater formed by the cancer was observed to be disappearing. 5 weeks later, the lesion was completely healed and only a small scar remained caused by the biopsy. Wilbur Diamond, 58, suffered from prostate cancer. After just 2 months of treatment, all hardness had vanished except for a single small nodule, and he reported that he no longer suffered excruciating pain during urination. After just 3 months of treating patients with Essiac, Dr. Bruce and Dr. McClure were deeply impressed. In their first report about Essiac, they wrote, quote, "Clinically on patients suffering from pathologically proven cancer, it reduces pain and causes a recession in the growth. Patients have gained weight and have shown an improvement in their general health. This after only 3 months' tests and the proof Ms. Cassie has to show of the many patients that she has benefited in the past 25 years has convinced the doctors at the Bruce Medical Center that Essiac has merit in the treatment of cancer. The doctors do not say that Essiac is a cure, but they do say that it is of benefit, it is non-toxic, and it is administered both orally and by intramuscular injection." Dr. Bruce encouraged René to also test Essiac on mice as well as clinically, not so much to see if it was effective, he had already seen convincing evidence that it was, but also as partners in research and development to refine and to perfect her formula by adding new herbs if required to obtain optimum results. So this time, René enthusiastically agreed. The Memorial Sloan Kettering Institute in New York agreed to provide the mice. With the expert advice and scientific knowledge of Dr. Bruce, they set about to discover as much as they could about the old Indian remedy, and they were not disappointed. According to Dr. Bruce, Dr. Philip Merker of the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center did the autopsy surveys on the mice treated with Essiac. Dr. Merker observed definite and pronounced changes in the animals which had not been found in the controls. They were very interested in further testing, but like his predecessors, would have to have the formula to establish if Essiac had any real merit in the treatment of cancer. Ever suspicious of the medical establishment, René refused. The National Cancer Institute was also interested in testing Essiac, but like Sloan Kettering, they wanted the formula, they were met with the same response from Renee, and that was no. So it would appear that Dr. Bruch understood Renee's refusal because he never pushed the issue. The study of ESIAC on both humans and mice would have to continue at the Bruch Clinic without the involvement of the venerated cancer institutions. And continue it did. Dr. Bruch was no newcomer to the field of herbal medicine, and over the years he had developed a close relationship with Elmer Grove of Lathrop, Missouri, a master herbalist widely regarded as the great authority on the subject, and it was with his help that Dr. Bruch was able to perfect the original ESIAC formula to such a degree that it no longer needed to be injected. Dr. Bruch felt that injecting ESIAC muscularly was an awkward and an uncomfortable way to administer it. Furthermore, it wasn't feasible for some cancer sufferers. I'm going to pause here and make an observation that at this juncture of time, from what I've observed, the taking of it as a tea is the way that it seems to work, the same way that the Indians were administering it back before the turn of the century. They just brewed up. That is, they boiled these herbs in water. This releases the essential oils in the herbs, which is the medicinal effect that you're looking for. Then you drink it orally. It goes through your stomach lining and into your digestive system, into your bloodstream, and goes out to the cells. The objective of the 8 cleansing herbs is to carry away the toxic debris, which is critical. And this is why the medical establishment has such great success with chemotherapy in killing tumors. There isn't any doubt but what these chemicals kill the tumors, but they don't carry the debris away. That's their problem. So, orthodox medicine, they use chemotherapy and they charge for it, and they make good money, and the pharmaceutical companies make good money. What they need is the 8 cleansing herbs to carry that debris away. Hell, it might work as well as bloodroot. Now, bloodroot, remember, is a natural remedy. Bloodroot is a natural herb, but taken in high dosages will kill you. It's an herb that's toxic. It's poison. And think about it. You know, if it will kill cancer cells, if you take enough of it, it'll kill other cells, won't it? But taken in small dosages, it doesn't appear to kill normal cells. It just kills cancer cells. And those cancer cells, when they're expelled in your stool, will look like cottage cheese in the toilet. It's kind of an odd-looking substance, cottage cheese. Now, what they discovered through extensive experimentation on human patients was that by adding more herbs called potentiators, P-O-T-E-N-T-I-A-T-O-R-S, potentiators, to ESIAC's original core formula, ESIAC became even more effective, so much so that it was possible to administer the entire formulation orally. Now, this was quite a breakthrough because it meant that people could treat themselves in the privacy of their own homes. Long treks to the clinic were no longer necessary, especially good news to those patients who either couldn't afford transportation or were in such pain they couldn't bear to travel. ESIAC, in its newly evolved formulation, was never again administered by injection to human patients. During the course of their research, Dr. McClure decided to send out questionnaires to some of Renee's former patients to determine their long-term survival rate. So he received back a number of testimonials, all properly witnessed, that seemed to reflect that Renee had always maintained, or what she'd always maintained, and as ESIAC cured cancer. Norma Thompson, treated 20 years ago, no recurrence, alive and well. Clara Thornberry, treated 22 years ago, no recurrence, alive and well. D.H. Laundrie, treated 11 years ago, no recurrence, he was alive and well. Nellie McVitie was treated 23 years ago, no recurrence, and she was alive and well. Wilson Hammer, treated 31 years ago, no recurrences, he was alive and well. John McNee, Jack Finley, Lizard Ward, or Lizzie Ward rather, J.H. Stewart, Eliza Vitch, V-E-I-T-C-H, and Fred Walker. All treated 30, 20, 14, 16, 18, and 20 years ago with no recurrence, and they were alive and well. Now, Renee's life couldn't have been going any better. She and Dr. Baruch, through careful study, observation, and experimentation, had perfected the original ESIAC formula to a degree that left little question as to its effectiveness. At least, so she thought. But once again, the medical establishment found its way into Renee's life. The laboratories supplying the inoculated mice suddenly stopped supplying them, and in a letter written to Dr. Baruch, they said, "We cannot send you a report along the outline requested for obvious reasons." Well, now, just what were these obvious reasons? "And we also regret to inform you that because of technical difficulties, we will be unable to process similar material in the future." So it was obvious that something had happened. Compounding the problem, the American Medical Association, which is the mother of all establishments, made it clear to Dr. Baruch and Renee that it forbade its members to refer patients to unknown remedies. Thus, the number of available patients dramatically dropped. Now, let me point this out. See, here's this Dr. Baruch. Now, he's licensed, bonded, and insured, conducting cancer research. He discovers this cancer cure. So does the AMA. And they say, "Hey, wait a minute. This threatens our livelihood." So they wrote him a letter and they said, "Now listen, we're going to lift your license now if you keep this up." Next time we'll take a look at Dr. Baruch and whether or not he's going to knuckle under. But most doctors knuckle under or they go underground. Now, here in America, there is a thriving underground medical community. I don't know of anybody in America that cannot receive alternative cancer therapy at a price that they can afford. I don't know of anybody anywhere. That's how common, that's how well established the underground medical community is. But nobody cures cancer above board. Nobody's walking around saying, "Hey, listen, you got cancer, come on over here to Hank's place." You know, like in the old days when you needed an abortion. You know, "Come on over here to Joe's place. We got abortions for sale for $100. No, nobody's doing that. But if you seek it out, you can find it. Now, here again, the AMA in the United States, just like the Medical Association up in Canada, says that we got to put a stop to this. And with good reason. Threatens their livelihood. Now, remember, it was the allopathic medical doctors that discovered chelation. Chelation is that natural cure, that natural remedy for taking the plaque out of your arteries. Boy, they hate that one. Because the big money in cardiovascular disease is in bypass surgery. And chelation eliminates bypass surgery. Chelation eliminates the biggest money maker in medicine. Cardiovascular disease. All right, we're about out of time. I got to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and good night, friends.